Networking and marketing made simple is for you, the business owner that has a product, service, or message that you truly believe in. My name is Scott Aaron, and each week we'll take a behind-the-scenes look at real-world networking and marketing tactics while leveraging LinkedIn to get what you have in front of many more people. Thanks for spending time with me, and let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Networking and Marketing Made Simple. Super excited for today's episode for a number of reasons. Number one, I got a brand new interview coming at you, and I know you guys love these so much. I get incredible feedback each and every week when these drop. And, you know, the biggest takeaway that I continue to get from you guys is your appreciation for exposure to people that you didn't know about prior to listening to the episode. And I think that's the beautiful thing about having a podcast is that you can connect with some incredible people that have incredible stories and are doing amazing things. And I get to share that with all of you. So excited about today's interview. But the biggest thing that I'm excited for is, number one, got a couple firsts. Number one, first mathematician that I've ever interviewed on this podcast. And number two, they're also an algorithm specialist. And I can't tell you how many emails I get from you guys, questions during our workshops about social media algorithms, this, that, or the other. So we're going to talk about all that and more. So Noah Healy, welcome to today's episode.
Thanks for having me here, Scott. Sounds like it's going to be fun.
It is. I'm looking forward to it. So before we talk about all the stuff that you're doing now with algorithm development and everything that you know about it, let's rewind the tape first. So if you could kind of rewind the tape of your business journey and press stop at a point in time where you feel it was that moment that was a pivotal moment or a catalytic moment that really got you digging into everything that you're doing now, what was that moment for you?
That's actually a very clear thing, because like, the only reason I'm doing this is because of one of those moments. So I'm a recreational mathematician, and I was working on an algorithm for collaboration and coordination of information on large networks. And I have this approach and decided to create a marketplace with this approach because financial markets are known to be incredibly good actors in that particular realm. And so the thinking was that if this approach could not do better, but if it could do nearly as well, that would be a strong validator. And then the approach being more general could apply to other things. So it turns out that it didn't do approximately as well. It's actually hundreds of thousands of times more efficient than the markets we actually have. And since we spend trillions of dollars on those every year, the scale of catalyzing a better way to do that is, well, it frankly dwarfs anything else I could do with my time. So that has become sort of my big focus.
So obviously, math was one of my strong points growing up. I always loved numbers. I always loved, you know, my wife still like quizzes me. She'll like say, what's this times this? And I'm just very quick with it for some reason. It just came kind of natural to me. Also, you know, understanding how money works and compounded interest and all that stuff. So I can resonate the love of math. But what really drew you to the mathematics side of thing? And more importantly, if you could put your thumb on an aspect of the importance of what you know about mathematics and how that's compounded into everything that you're doing now, what aspect of math really did you fall in love with that has been applicable to everything that you're doing today?
So I too have always had a pretty good number facility and sort of good at coming up with reasonable arguments and so on. But the thing that really got me on my journey was after training in engineering and more of traditional kinds of engineering, I actually got a job programming computers. And because of that sort of engineering ethics training, decided to dig in and learn more about this, these computer languages, computer programs, and so on. And that's when I eventually, you go back and you find the fundamental theorems of computation, which is pretty much what Alan Turing did. And computational mathematics is essentially the mathematics of imagination. So it's a structure in which it is possible to quantify everything that it is possible to imagine. And that's enormous. And so in terms of how that then, you know, undergirds and affects everything that I do, this sort of basic point of view that imagination is deeply linked to mathematical proofs, which are deeply linked to computer programs, becomes this combination of technology and life that really has been the basis of my ability to be employed, and also is one of my most common hobbies.
I love that. And, you know, we all have expertises in, you know, there's something that just really lights us up that we focus on and we really put our time and attention into. And one of your expert areas is game theory. And that's where you've been putting a lot of your time and attention into. For the audience that is not familiar with what game theory is, talk a little bit about that and what you're actually doing with your expertise now to serve other people.
Sure. So game theory is the mathematics of strategy. And I ran across that and decided to link it into my work with computation because it's basically about alignment. So a little story, I went to UVA. That's basically my hometown college. And UVA is actually somewhat famous for its honor system. They do unproctored tests for the most part. People just sign a little thing saying that they, you know, they played fair and everybody just trusts you. And it's a nice little idea. Different professors have different reactions to this. One of my professors' reaction was that, sure, you trust your students and you want to trust your students, but come on, let's be serious. So why not just give tests that actually can't be cheated on? And so his finals were take home, open book, open note, week-long affairs. But if you made any sort of mistake, if your penmanship wasn't good, he'd mark you down on anything that went wrong because there was no reason for it not to be perfect because all the conditions to allow it to be perfect were granted to you. And so this gets into sort of the game theory of cheating, the alignment of interests. And so a lot of people think about game theory and think about like trying to win chess or something like that. And that's largely about tactics. And game theory does have a little bit of insight to tactics, but as tactics get more and more complex, it becomes more and more important to actually gain tactical skill rather than gain strategic insight. Strategic insight's more important in situations like politics or warfare, where interests might align and they might clash. And so where my work exists, negotiation games, I've found a way when there are competitive cooperative relationships. So if you're in a marketplace and you're buying, the buyer and the seller both want that deal to happen, but there's different circumstances under which they would like that deal to happen. The buyer would like to buy, you know, for less, the seller would like to sell for more. So under those kinds of conditions, we can realign the strategic situation and make the marketplace function better. And this is also a circumstance that can arise in other web scale circumstances to provide information. Right now, it's fairly difficult to arrange your information diet in a way that's actually helpful to you. And so I have ways to work through what it means, both from the provision and consumption side of those things, to align interests in a more valuable fashion.
And I think that could be a benefit to everyone. And, you know, something that you really love talking about, but you're also bringing to the attention of a lot of business owners, is the theory or the concept of shifting financial systems to make the production of certain things more profitable, but also increasing the economic potential for everyone. Speak to that point a little bit, because everybody is looking for an edge and an advantage right now, whether it be a brick and mortar company that is still belly to belly, or obviously in the digital age that we're in, people that are now more in the online space. Talk about the shifting of what financial systems can be done to make businesses more profitable and to really start setting yourself apart from the competition that's out there.
Well, intriguingly, the best way to do it is to actually stop setting yourself apart from the competition that's out there. The modern internet has essentially allowed for a proliferation of branding, which has actually made our economies more and more primitive. You know, in something like the Middle Ages, where there'd be itinerant tinkers, there's nothing like a tool brand and lifetime guarantees on hammers and things like that. You have to know specific things about not just the person you're dealing with, but the people they were dealing with. And those sorts of reputational things become very complicated. Amazon has perpetrated a proliferation of brands that's so large, it's no longer practical to actually sort for good deals on their sites, because there's so many deals and so many overlapping things that when you just look for the low prices, you get a lot of irrelevant noise. So actually, it is a combination of standards allowing recommodification or maintenance of commodification, combined with marketplaces that become less expensive and more intelligent. So I'd said before, you know, we spend trillions of dollars on these marketplaces. If we develop these new super intelligent algorithms and deploy them, then we can get the same sorts of pricing values for significantly less money. And that lowered cost of operation goes to the bottom line of the producers. Another analogy I use, because people are sort of a lot more connected to the medical field, that's another thing that globally we spend trillions of dollars on. In fact, we spend trillions of dollars just in this country alone on medical care. Modern AI isn't really up to the standards of providing medical care right now, but the primary problem with that is that the alignment issues of understanding why decisions are being made and that those decisions would actually be in the patient's interest isn't something that the current crop of AI creators has been pursuing or seems to have any interest in pursuing. If that problem were to be solved, then these systems, which are expensive but cost billions, not trillions of dollars, would be able to provide medical care at or above the diagnosis of present doctors. And once again, hundreds of billions of dollars that are presently being spent keeping ourselves healthy could be refocused on other areas of our life without sacrificing that capability.
So outside of the point that you made about not thinking about setting yourself apart, but embedding yourself with other people out there. So there's a lot of entrepreneurs and online business owners that listen to this podcast and are always looking for things that they can do or focus on, or maybe just a simple mindset shift that they need to have, you know, in 2024 and where everything is going into the future. Two-part question. Number one, what's the mindset shift that online business owners need to have right now with everything that has changed in online marketing and online branding and online visibility? But second to that, what's your tip to those people that are really kind of struggling with adapting to the rapid changes in everything that's going on, whether it be algorithm changes, whether it be AI and how all the things are rapidly growing and expanding. What's your advice to those people listening to this today?
Well, I'd say the first thing is to start with that second thing. So the AI is going to be affecting online systems to an extreme degree. That's actually why I started working on this problem of networked consensus, is that I could see the writing on the wall of a large increase in the amount of computer input that we were going to have to be sorting through. If you're drowning now, take comfort that the people who are treading water will be drowning soon, I guess, because this is a rising wave that is going to be increasing at speeds that it isn't really possible to even think about productively. The mindset shift, to a great extent, I think, is going to have to be around how to take that drive that you have to put forward that effort to get where you're going and build new institutions and systems that still are going to reward you for the effort that you're putting forth, but are reconnecting on a human level to actual interests. Because if what you're doing is just messaging or some other basically online computer system, the computers are going to eat that incredibly rapidly. And they work for less than you do because you're using a computer already. So all of your breathing and eating and sleeping and clothing and shelter and family are cost overheads that they don't actually have to endure. So stop trying to win the race against the machine and build a new forum where the machines are helping us instead of just playing that particular game.
Embrace change instead of running away from it, because there's a lot of people that are doing that.
But also just running with it. The first phase of computerization has largely been focused on getting computers to do jobs humans used to do. So, if you look at movies from like the 50s, they have typing pools, but the problem of flawlessly typing out a business letter is largely solved if you can do editing in your text box, and Google will sort of figure out what your spelling mistakes were and so on. So you don't need a typing pool of people that can type, 500 words a minute anymore. And that's fine as far as it goes, but we've been putting more and more of our actual important human activities into these machines. And it is to a great extent run away from us. So there's a process of embracing change that requires you to actually rethink how things are working. So one of my examples is that a moldboard plow doesn't really work the same way that a modern tractor does, because having that much force available changes the way that you can plow the ground in ways that are advantageous. And so we redesigned how we did that to make it work better. Think through, if perfect memory exists, because it does now, what can you make better about that situation? And better not just for this specific interaction that you're engaging in, but the pattern of interactions, and build out these systems that will be able to withstand somebody else spending an extra quarter on computers or coming up with a better way to hack into a spam bot.
Now, you also are a podcaster yourself, and I believe you have a co-host. So talk to the audience a little bit about you know, the podcast that you have and some of the things that you talk about and who your show is geared towards?
Yeah, thank you. So my co-host is named Marty Wiener. He's the former CTO of Reddit. He's semi-retired these days. And he and I have a podcast called The Fourth Age, The AI Revolution, where we talk about AI. We do bring on guests. We also have sort of personal conversations. Marty and I have somewhat different, but still not particularly common views on AI. Marty has a lot of experience using some of these learning systems that they were building out at Reddit. And he's very interested in machine consciousness and artificial general intelligence, so-called AGI. And these generative systems like ChatGPT and DALL-E and some of these other things. I'm a lot more interested in artificial superintelligence or ASI. I'm a lot more interested in some of the deep learning systems, things like the deep chess bot, AlphaChess, AlphaGo, and some of the other techniques that have come out of there, actually just within the last week, which if this is a few months from now, it'll be early this year, Google put forth a robot that could solve international mathematical Olympiad geometry problems at between the level of the highest human behavior and the second highest human behavior. So not smarter than the smartest person in the world, but smarter than the second smartest person in the world. And so we have debates and discussions. We're hoping to engage with people who see these technologies and want to think about and productively deploy them, and hopefully much better than them, in ways that allow societies to flourish. The name of the podcast, The Fourth Age, is based on the idea that the first age would be pre-agricultural humanity, second age would be agricultural, third age industrial, and now we are in the fourth age where our primary technology is computational. And so we're going to have to think about how thinking and imagination will need to be ritualized and structured, so that we, you know, don't lose access to creativity, but also don't just create hallucinations of meaningless non-reality that doom us all.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's extremely interesting conversations over there. So, Noah, as we wind down, before I get to my final question, if people are interested in learning more about you, the services, the ways that you help people, even just checking out the podcast, where's the best place for people to go to find out more about you?
Well, the podcast, The Fourth Age, is on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, and that name should find it. It's for the number four. For me, the quickest and most direct way to get in touch with me, I've got an email address, noahphealy@yahoo.com. And you can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. Noah Healy there will find me. My project, Coordinated Discovery Markets, I have a company called CoorDisc, CoorDisc, and CoorDisc.com. You can find more information about how those things work.
Awesome. Well, all that information that Noah shared will be in the show notes of this episode and the email that goes out attached to this, so you're not going to have to look too far. So Noah, final question, what does success truly mean to you?
I'd say success is building something that endures. We'll see if I can make it.
our legacies are left every single day. And to your point, it's creating something that will withstand the tests of time. And through all the iterations and changes in business, it still sees that through. So just want to thank you again for being here today, sharing all your wisdom, your insights, and everything that you gave to my audience today. Just grateful for your obviously openness and willingness to share everything. And thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So again, anyone that's interested in learning about Noah and everything that he's working on, check the show notes from today's episode. So I do hope you found today's episode helpful. Love and gratitude to each and every one of you. and I'll talk to you next time. Thank you so much for checking out today's episode. If you could, please support this podcast by hopping over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any place that you're listening to this. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you loved most and what you would like to hear more of. But also, if you would like to learn how to take your business to the next level, whether it's using LinkedIn or working directly with myself and Nancy in our intimate group coaching programs, you can head over to www.thetimetogrow.com or scottaron.net to learn more. Thank you again for your support, love and gratitude, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.